Proudly presented by Provident Payments, this is Hometown Heroes, celebrating everyday Americans who answer the call of duty.
Welcome back to Hometown Heroes and our visit today with 96-year-old Walter Granger of Bakersfield, California. Perhaps he was your shop teacher if you grew up in Kern County, where he's lived his entire life, except for the 2 years Uncle Sam had him crisscrossing the Pacific on the USS Crenshaw during World War II. We heard about Mr. Granger's vision for the Kern County World War II Veterans Memorial, which will be unveiled this coming Veterans Day, November 11th. He and the rest of that volunteer team are still raising funds to complete the memorial, and I have a link up for you at hometownheroesradio.com if you would like to contribute. I know you enlisted in the Navy at age 17 in 1944, but I want to hear a little more about the years leading up to that. You're one of six children in your family, right?
Six boys. Everybody said Dad must have wanted a girl.
Kept trying, but ended up with six boys. So that had to be interesting, growing up around the oil fields in Kern County with five brothers. And you're number five out of six, is that right?
Five, correct.
So what was that childhood like? I mean, these are the Depression years, but you're here in oil country and you got big brothers beating you up and a little brother that maybe you can get the upper hand on. What were the things that dotted your memories from those years?
Well, you never had to worry about what you were going to wear the next year because your older brother had it on and you were going to wear. Dad was really good about, he had all the equipment to repair shoes, you know, the hammers and the nails and the glue and all that. Quite often you knew the shoe was going to be fixed up and Dad would always polish it so it kind of looked new. And Mom was real good with the needle and thread and the sewing machine. But people said it was tough. I guess it was tough. Thank goodness for credit at the grocery store. It was one of those deals where you knew personally the whole family at the grocery store. You knew the whole family at the drug store. We all went to the same doctor. Now you look back on it and you think, well, it was really tough, but there was always food on the table and clothes to wear, and we were always clean. I knew that come Sunday we'd all be in church.
And how'd you get along with those brothers?
We got along very well. My dad was a fabulous husband, fabulous father. My mom was a fabulous mother, a fabulous wife. They showed the way, and we all came out all right.
And I like to ask this question of any of the veterans I meet, because sometimes there's something there, sometimes there's not so much, but it's always fascinating to me how we make plans for our lives, and then life happens. And sometimes somebody else has a plan for our life that's better than the one we had for ourselves. And I'm just curious for you, did you have some of those boyhood dreams or ambitions, you know, when you're running around with your brothers daydreaming that, hey, someday this is what I'm going to do or who I'm going to be?
Early on, I wanted to be a history teacher. I don't know if it was because the history teacher was so great at Standard. All the teachers were great at Standard. All the administrators were great at Standard. And when I got to high school, all the teachers were great. The history teacher was a personal friend. That may have had something to do with it, but I planned on being a history teacher. After the war, I got to thinking about it. I'm not necessarily an outdoor guy. We never were campers or anything like that. But I got to thinking about being in a classroom all day long. That just didn't sit well with me. So I thought, well, you know, if I was a shop teacher, regardless of the shop, I was close to being outdoors. And I ended up in the auto shop where half of the kids were out on the apron working. And so it worked out great. I ended up teaching a little bit of each. You know, when you teach classes like that, especially when I started out at Shafter, I taught auto, metal, wood, drafting. I was the audiovisual guy because I could pick up the movies in town. I lived in town and drove to Shafter every day. The girls, whenever they wanted to have a fancy dance or something, my kids and I did all the preparation, so you were involved in everything. It's been a wonderful life. I'm a lucky guy.
Well, there's no doubt in my mind that there are some of your former students listening to this right now, and I'm sure hearing your voice is putting a smile on their face. And, you know, you mentioned your oldest brother getting drafted right after the war started. But I'm interested in that. You know, the start of the war, Pearl Harbor, December 7th, 1941. Do you remember how you found out about that, where you were and how that unfolded?
We were getting ready for church. My dad and the older boys had built a big sleeping porch on the back of the house, so that all of us kids were in the back getting ready for church, and it came over the radio, and we said, oh my gosh. And then naturally, you know, everybody at church said, what's going to happen? And we heard FDR on the radio, and that was it.
And you were 15 at the time, still in high school. And you alluded to this a little earlier when you talked about the Kern County World War II Veterans Memorial that you guys are working on. It's going to be ready here in November. That there will be part of that memorial dedicated to the Japanese-American families here in Kern County whose lives were so severely changed. And so you saw the effects of that in the months that followed there at your high school?
Yes, and it was just kind of a shock, you know.
I mean, these are your classmates. These are kids, most of them born in America, that you've been going to school with, and now all of a sudden they're being taken away. Do you remember what that was like as a 15-year-old trying to wrap your brain around?
Well, and not knowing, just like there were several on the track team. I was on the track team for 4 years, and they were friends. And in your various classes, saw some of them at church. They eventually had their own Methodist church, Japanese Methodist church. Our community at that time, all the churches did things together. We had sport clubs and contests, and then they're gone. And you don't know anything about it.
Did you ever, you know, after the war, have a chance to see any of them again, some of your track teammates or the Japanese Americans you'd known?
No, never did. Never did.
You mentioned also that the second of the six boys in your family passed away during the war. What can you tell me about that? How that happened, when that happened, and where were you? Because that couldn't have been easy for you.
The way I found out, first of all, we knew that he was very healthy all of his life. So when we heard that he was not well, we were all surprised. The way we found out, it was in July, and my folks like to go to the Long Beach area, so they and the baby were off on vacation, and I was home alone, and a taxi cab drove up in front. The guy rang the bell, and I thought, what in the world is this all about? He must be lost and wants some direction. And he handed me the telegram and turned away. And I opened it, and it said, sorry to inform you that your son, Edwin, has passed away at Sawtelle Hospital. And I thought, holy Toledo, what am I going to do? I don't even know where my folks are. They're down in the Long Beach area. So I tried to think of a place where they had been before, and I could. Then I had to find a phone number, and I found a phone number of a couple of places where I thought they had stayed before, and left my number and called me ASAP, and then waited, and finally, I don't know, I have no recollection of how long it was, but it wasn't the same day. Dad called and said, what's happening? And in between that time, I got a phone call that they wanted the folks to come by to figure out what to do to the Sawtelle Hospital. And it ended up that the folks went there and decided to bury him there in the Sawtelle Cemetery across the street from the Sawtelle Hospital. Naturally, we all went down there to the service, and it was kind of a dingy area, but they felt like that was the thing to do. There was a veteran section there. Subsequent to that, as we've gone back, they still didn't do very much, but what are you going to do? And then when they put the National Cemetery here, I thought, well, the thing to do is to go back down there and talk to them and find out about moving him up here. Well, in the interim, in the 70s, the U.S. government took over the Sawtelle Cemetery and now called it the Los Angeles National Cemetery. It looks like a miniature Arlington. It's just beautiful. And we went down, and they were just setting up all the digital information so anybody could find out who's there and where they are. One gal was super nice. she told us how to get there. And one of the guys said, well, don't tell them how to get there. I'm going to take them over there. And we went over, and the dingy area was no longer dingy. It was really nice. So we came back, and we drove through, and it was just a magical transformation. It was just beautiful. And so I told the gal, I said, well, we're going to go home and talk about it. And I said, can I hug you? And she said, I've never been hugged by a World War II veteran before. And I said, thank you so much. They were so gracious.
Yeah, that's right off the 405 freeway there in West L.A. It's a beautiful spot to visit, and more special for someone who's got a personal connection like you do. And I can't imagine what that must be like as a teenager to get that telegram and then to be the one responsible for informing your parents. What were you able to find out about what happened to him and how he got sick and why it took that turn?
Well, they said he had rheumatic fever, and had evidently the connection between rheumatic fever as a rheumatic heart. In those days, they evidently didn't know much about it. And still to this day, you don't hear much about a rheumatic heart or rheumatic fever.
And he had been serving in the Navy?
Yes, he was in the Navy. He and number three was at Berkeley and became a 90-day wonder. And number four, and he and another friend, they all joined together at the same time. Do you know what a 90-day wonder is?
Absolutely. Usually it's used with a bit of a pejorative sense from those who had to serve under the 90-day wonders, huh? They became officers in that time.
Yeah, well, right. They made them an ensign right away. The worst part was that some of them thought that they were war-experienced seamen and did not hit it off at all with the crew. But we had a couple 90-day wonders aboard, and they were fabulous kids, just like I'm sure my older brother was, that they fit right in. They didn't try to put anything upon the regular men that had been in the Navy for years. So it was a big joke.
And as far as Edwin's story, what was the ship that he was on?
He wasn't. He never got on a ship, Edwin.
Because he got sick before he could be assigned?
Correct.
There's a project right now that I've talked about a few times on this program that's called Stories Behind the Stars. When they say the stars, they mean all those gold stars in Washington, D.C. at the National World War II Memorial, which you've been to, that represent well over 400,000 Americans who died during World War II while serving in the armed forces. And it wasn't necessarily that they died in action, but they died. And so you're telling us one of those stories behind the stars in your older brother, Edwin. Have you ever thought, in all these years since, what his life might have turned into? What he would have been like if he'd had the opportunities that you and your other brothers had?
Oh, definitely, because he was very mechanically inclined. He would have had a business somewhere. As we grew up, all the kids had old cars. If the folks changed cars, well, then the 1926 Essex Terraplane that the folks had became our car. We were the terror of Oildale, climbing the hills. There was enough kids to put some more weight on the back of the car, and we could outclimb lots of cars that looked like they were better than we were, but that old Essex really climbed those hills in North Oildale.
And here, you've lost a brother. You've got three other older brothers who are in the war. What made you say, hey, I want to sign up? I want to go in the Navy before they draft me?
Well, there wasn't any second thought. Dad was in the Navy in World War I. The emphasis, naturally, then was one for the Navy, all for the Navy. The baby was in the Navy in the Korean War. So there was all six boys served in the Navy in wartime. I've often said I'm one of seven Granger boys who served during wartime in the armed forces and proud of it.
So that's your dad and his six sons.
Correct, yeah. My folks were very patriotic, had flags all the time. Matter of fact, my mother's immigrant parents, German, named her Alice Liberty Jensen because she was born on the 4th of July.
We're learning quite a bit about Walter Granger and his family, but we're not done yet. Again, if you'd like to support this World War II veteran's mission to honor his fellow vets, and especially the fallen, with this new World War II Veterans Memorial in Bakersfield, California, go to hometownheroesradio.com. I also have the memorial's website linked for you on the Hometown Heroes Facebook page. And we're going to hear some of Mr. Granger's World War II Navy memories when Hometown Heroes comes right back after this.
Do you ever have those moments where you realize you've been settling for less than the best for far too long? Sometimes we just accept the status quo without looking around for better ways to do things. And I've got to tell you, when it comes to your money, I believe I found a better way with EECU. Take a look at myeecu.org and you'll see why. EECU is not a bank. It's a nonprofit credit union that's all about taking care of you, the member. That's one of the reasons EECU just keeps growing and growing. Close to 300,000 members now in 10 different California counties. Over 30,000 ATMs. Free mobile banking. And what I really love is how EECU always goes above and beyond to serve the community. In 2013, the leadership and generosity of EECU helped establish Central Valley Honor Flight. More than 1,000 veterans now have gotten to see their memorials in Washington, D.C. for free. And that's just one example of the community involvement EECU takes oh so seriously. Pick up the phone and become a member today. 1-800-538-3328. That's 800-538-3328.